Come here. Come on. Come on, little one. Come on, get in there. Oh, shit.
It's March 27th, 2012.
This is the Idle Thumbs post-Kickstarter progress cast, the seventh one. I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
And I'm Sean Vanaman.
And we are recording from the new Idle Thumbs office in the Mission in San Francisco.
Currently, an empty room. Sounds really nice.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be this echoey when we really do this thing.
Stuff in here right now. It's literally just a cube with a floor. Well, a cube without a floor wouldn't be a cube.
That's and a true. Ceiling.
And a ceiling.
Also necessary for cubes.
Yeah, we've got all those
things. Or a rectangular prism.
So, thank you for giving us this cube.
Rectangular prism.
Rectangular prism.
This is probably the most tangible evidence for us actually getting money to do things for real. Yeah. Like, this is one of the actual reasons we wanted to do Kickstarter in the first place, was because we wanted an actual office and recording space for Idle Thumbs that we could keep on an ongoing basis. And now we have one. We just have to put things in it now.
Yeah, so this is like our excited slumber party recording where nothing's actually moved in, but we're just like, yeah, we gotta do a progress cast in the office. It's the most reverberant, horrible space with nothing. We're just standing in a room holding a microphone, but you know.
Yeah, we're planning on putting up like sound dampening panels on the
baffling walls
and all kinds of
We're gonna baffle this room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be baffled. We'll be baffled in it.
Yeah. We're gonna baffle it.
This is gonna be awesome. I don't know, this is the coolest thing we've done this far.
It's super weird that Idle Thumbs has a physical location now.
Yeah.
That has never been true.
In a mailing address?
Nearly a decade of Idle Thumbs existing. This is new territory.
It's pretty great, though.
Physically.
And we gotta get that fire truck parked out back. It's gonna be good. We'll post some photos somewhere, I guess in the update, of...
I'm sure there will be some on our Twitter feeds. If you go to our Twitter feeds, you can...
Or on the forums and on like our personal Facebook pages of us giving thumbs up and dancing around. Yeah. Don't go to those, though.
I don't really post anything on Facebook.
I'll post on your Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, maybe you can listen to me talk to Brendan Chung now if we're going to stitch these
together. Real quick, you were playing Amnesia last night.
Oh, my God.
And I was watching you play. And what was really interesting about that experience for me is that being the guy watching over your shoulder, I was just removed enough from it that none of the kind of terror of that game was really bleeding through to me. But I could tell you were just on edge.
I was absorbing 100% of it.
Even with like people in the apartment and like me standing around, Sean was still, just because that game, when you're the focus of its attention, it just enraptures you entirely. And so you were still, even when you were like turning around to say things to me, I could tell you were just like constantly
tight.
On the edge. And it's totally understandable because that's what that game does to you. But it was interesting observing it in that way because I've never really seen that before.
And also, I don't know any other thing that I've ever digested where I'm like the lights were on.
Yeah.
People were in the house. You guys were having like a cogent conversation behind me that I was a part of.
Yeah.
And then I would just sort of fall out of it and get into super panic.
Yeah.
And then I had weird dreams last night. I had terrible nightmares that my teeth got sharp and were falling out. It was really strange.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I would bite things and they would crunch.
Like the bugs?
Like the
weird bug noises?
It was really
That's honestly one of the most disturbing sounds in any video
the
game.
The bug crunching sound is the one thing that did creep through when we were having that conversation. Even not playing Amnesia, whenever Sean's character would start freaking out and the little... would show up, I'd sort of have to pull out of the conversation and go, bug noise.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm definitely one of those people. I don't know if it's genetic or what, but I'm one of those people who has like an extreme reaction to nails on a chalkboard, but not just nails on a chalkboard, things of that particular tenor.
Yeah,
so that also includes like people biting their fork.
People biting a fork
when they eat. Yeah, which I just, oh my God, it makes me go nuts. And the crunching bugs, skittering, crunching bugs sound in Amnesia like falls directly in that space in my brain. So not only is it unnerving just from sort of an atmospheric standpoint, and
but it elicits a physical response.
It
from
really,
you.
Really does. Yeah. It really lands right in that space. And so it's incredibly effective. I don't know if that was intentional or not on the part of the sound designer, but it was Like, that sound really puts me on edge.
Oh, it's the worst. Terrible. It's so good. And yeah, like we were talking about yesterday, that sound shows up so often in a game. Like, it's just a systemized effect. So it's not like, you're not surprised by its presence when it shows up, but it's the most effective thing, just even though...
Well, because it's simultaneously, it's the sort of Pavlovian response of, oh shit, the fact that this is happening gives me just sort of the video game information of, oh, my sanity is...
Things are getting worse.
Things are getting bad. But then also, it really is just entirely intrinsically, aside from that kind of notification function, it is just a terrifying sound always. And so one or both of those, depending on the situation, is enough to be effective.
It's funny that because when they introduce new sounds and new horrific things, it's amazing that, like, in the game, you have to... There's a personal struggle to get over the fear of the new thing they've just introduced and become comfortable with it enough to explore the space and solve whatever puzzles in there.
Yeah.
And, like, I have this running app for, like, when I go on a run. And after I finish it, I can look down and it shows me my rate of speed. It goes, oh, this is, at one point you were running a 6-minute mile, but you were averaging an 8, mm-hmm. but at one point you were running an 11. Yeah. And it's in color. And I would love to see a heat map of my speed moving through an environment. Oh,
relative to your sanity.
Relative to, just because at the very beginning of an environment, I can't, the game is physically paralyzing. I don't move my character very far, very fast, and I stare at the floor the entire time.
Well,
Once I've got the layout.
They dumped you into the water. The area with the
Oh my god. You just
like it took you like 2 minutes to even start moving. You were just looking around behind you, going like, oh god, no. No,
don't even know what to do. Basically you said I have to catch the bus and I went save, quit, done. I'm still just standing on a box of
without
water.
Sort of moral backup like
and I have no I was done.
Are you using the Nike app for running?
Yeah.
So that's the one where you can choose to play like the power mix when you get near the end of your set.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is I could on the sly, replace your power mix with the bug crunching sound.
Oh my god!
So you get like getting near the end of your stretch, you expect Eye of the Tiger to come on, but instead,
I would never come back. I would become like a
you jogging through the hills of San Francisco in the middle of the night. Like,
oh my god!
You would die in Golden Park, and a dog would find your arm.
Yeah. I would just be a feral man.
God, that would be an incredible prank to plan someone. Jesus!
Oh my gosh! Because then it goes, oh man, you're coming up on your personal best, and then like it ramps up the music. Because I've run through Golden Gate Park at night before,
it would make
which is scary.
You would book it,
if that
bug starts
showing up. You start hearing
up,
people behind you that aren't there. It's really because the tenor of your feet or something.
Oh, that's like,
yeah, I would never come back. That'd be it.
My worst Golden Gate night experience was just it was.
Oh my god!
I had a legit amnesia experience at Golden Gate Park at night.
This is an incredible story.
Our housemate Adam, Sean, my housemate, we did this crazy birthday arg for him. But the first thing that I had to do was go out to Stowe Lake and tape a package underneath the table on the pagoda, which meant that I had to go to Golden Gate Park at like 5 a.m.
Yeah. So the goal was that he would wake up at like 7. He would go to Stowe Lake, which is, if you've ever been to San Francisco, Golden Gate Park is. It's very similar to Central Park, and there's
the largest urban like park in the country.
It is. It's awesome, and it's kind of the same era of park as Central Park. A lot of the same just sort of designers and ideas behind building it, and lots of use of natural space. So there's just trees everywhere, dense foliage everywhere. There are parts of Golden Gate Park you probably can't get to without like a machete. And the goal was we were trying to figure out when we should put this clue taped underneath a bench in the dead center of the park so he would be able to find it at like 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. I guess.
Yeah.
And the night before, Jake and I were planning it out, and he's like, I'll just get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'll walk out to that bench, I'll tape it underneath there and come back. And I'm like, okay, I'll set my alarm to make sure that you're out there.
Yeah, I'm not usually a person to get freaked out by doing things like walking around in the middle of the night, but inside Golden Gate Park when it's dark, when you have to walk down the weird nature paths where there's no lights, I started to get the like, like looking behind me and stuff.
He's an imposing dude. Like, have you never been Jake?
I'm an imposing guy.
You're over 6 feet tall, broad shouldered.
But anyway,
like, you know.
The stupidest part of all this is the place where I got freaked out was right outside the De Young Museum where there is a light. But the reason that I got freaked out is because I was walking across sort of the big open space in front of the museum, and I saw just another person walking by sort of through like a foggy street light. I was like, oh, there's another guy out here. And he kept walking like perpendicular to me. Like I was walking sort of in front of the museum and he was walking towards it. But then he got behind a tree and just disappeared. I was like, huh, okay. okay, guess he's just stopping there. Kept walking until, you know, sort of as you walk past a tree, the sort of just parallax, and you end up, you know, I started seeing the guy, and he was just standing behind the tree. And then right when about two-thirds of his body was finally exposed from the tree, he just stepped behind it again. And I was like, huh, okay, well, that's fine. Kept walking, stepped behind it again.
What?
And again, until he was completely behind me, and I had walked entirely past him, and he was behind this tree. And that's when I called Sean and said, wake up, get in your goddamn car, and pick me up.
No, there was a text message where I texted you and I said, are you cool? I was like, hey man, everything good with planning the evidence? And God, I have to just go into my archive of text messages and find it and put it up on Twitter. Because it is something like...
It was just like,
no, I'm not cool. Legitimate hobo man stalking me.
I think it wasn't even that. It was just like, guys hiding behind a tree watching me as I walk through the park. And then they're like, I'm coming over.
I said, do you need me to come get you? And then just one word, yes.
Period. I felt like a baby too, because by the time you showed up, that was right when the sun came up. So it was like, you pulled up and picked me up, and then like chirping bird and like two old ladies jogging go by, and I was like, what? It was totally scary 10 minutes ago. Leave me alone.
Yeah. I did catch him right as like we turn on the lights to his bedroom, but his laundry just looked like a monster, so it's him.
But it was a real version of the horrible shit that happens in Amnesia, where you just see a figure just disappear behind a door.
There was a moment in Amnesia where there was that door that you had piled barrels up in front of.
I got scared and put barrels in front of the door.
You had like retraced your steps and like gone around the whole level and like followed the wall out to the other side. And you came back to this room and you opened the door and it was really dark and just there was, you know, a little bit of light casting shadows. And as you open the door, you see this shape kind of run by the door and you're like, oh my God. And then you went in the room and realized it was just the barrel that had fallen over. That was pushed over, that you yourself had stacked on the other side of the door.
You created a lamb cat jumping out of the garbage scare for yourself. Yeah. That's good.
By just stacking barrels up against the door because I'd been afraid 10 minutes before.
And when I saw it too, it really, like, I was startled when I saw it as well, because it really looked like a shape just... Had darted by. It was really amazing.
Yeah, God, that game is amazing.
It does things to you.
We should talk about that more when we're not in Reverb Town, USA.
Yeah.
Or is that the perfect place to talk about?
No, it probably sounds horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Just stepping on crunchy bugs. God, that game.
I'm also super excited about what Dan Pinchbeck and the Chinese Room developers do with A Machine for Pigs.
Yeah,
that's a weird sentence. Yeah.
That just sounded like a weird surrealist dot.
I know. Yeah, no. I mean, I assume our readers know, but in case you don't, the small studio behind Dear Esther, which was originally a Source mod that got remade into a standalone game that you can get on Steam. It was in the IGF. Dan Pinchbeck, the writer, and the rest of it, I don't know the names of the people on the team, but he and the rest of his team have been contracted essentially by Frictional, the studio that made Amnesia, to make the next Amnesia game, which is called Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, which is an incredible name for a horror game. Like, just truly incredible. I'm so happy about everything related to this. Especially because Dear Esther is a game that I think was, you know, fairly flawed as a game, but really kind of one of those games where its heart is in the right place. And, like, atmospherically, it was really strong. And I'd be really curious to see what will happen when that team... just by nature of this project, gets put into the context of a more systemic game. Because, I mean, name of the game has Amnesia in it. Like, it's going to be presumably not massively dissimilar in terms of gameplay, but I expect all of the sort of atmospherics and the dynamics of the thing to be really informed by the aesthetic that those guys had at Dear Esther. I think that's just great. I think it's really awesome. Cool. Like, it's a really interesting move. I wonder how... they arrived at it. But it was, I can't wait to see what it
is. I hope that it was just the Amnesia guys played Dear Esther and fell in the water and said, okay, these guys should work on an Amnesia game.
Hopefully it's what happened when Brendan ended up making 30 Flights of Loving, where it's just, what if this weird thing happened? Oh, I guess that these people want to do this.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's going to be good.
Speaking of that, actually,
Sig,
we have an interview that, or not even so much an interview, but a conversation between Sean and Brendan that Sean recorded when he was down in LA a week or so ago. So we will just go right into that right now.
Cool. Bye, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you so much.
We'll have updates on the office and what we do. We'll probably be taking photos as we get this thing painted and furnished and everything over the next couple weeks.
Sweet.
I'm Sean Vanneman, alone. But I'm actually with Brendan Chung down in L.A., and I came down here to do some personal business, and here I am with you. We recorded a progress cast up on the roof of the barbecue, and it didn't work out, so here we are doing a good one.
Yes, I can't wait to do this one.
It is monsoon season here in L.A., and we're in my car. But first off, thank you so much for agreeing to do a crazy thing with us. We really like the game a lot. Shouldn't be too long before people get it in their hands.
Yeah, I can't wait to put it in people's hands and see what they think of it.
Do you spend much time thinking about that? Obviously the playability of your games, but when you think about your very specific creative style, do you actually worry about that ever? Or do you just, are you always, it must be really interesting to see how people digest that stuff, right?
Yeah. Like for me, I think it's more interesting to make stuff that I know will probably appeal to a very small amount of people. But it's fun because no one else is really making stuff for those people, so I get right. to make that stuff, so yeah. It's fun.
Definitely. It's like this crazy renaissance time of things like that, though. It's like, it feels like, at least when I first played Flotilla, and mechanically, the game was so sound, and it really spoke, like, I was trying to talk to Chris the other day about things I really like about that game, and it occurred to me just the sort of infinite problem-solving of 3D space that game allows you, just sort of angles and how am I going to get to this one point in the map while this other thing is moving at a certain speed is actually the strategy point I like of that game. And when it just smacked me in the face with rogue penguins with eye patches, that like nobody is doing that stuff. And did you, when you first layered that stuff in, was that just more to entertain yourself? Because I generally do that. I don't know, like...
Yeah. Like it's outer space stuff. It's very like Star Control 2 inspired, but I felt that if I were to try to do alien stuff, I know that there's a bazillion other artists out there who would do a much, much better job than I can do. So I thought, you know what? Animals in space. That's what I'm going to do. Pandas, penguins. I love that stuff.
And that, I guess we were talking earlier about just sort of figuring out what your personal limitations are and saying that's just what this is going to be about. Mm-hmm. Is that, I guess that's part of it then. I mean, to some extent where, you know, well, this is what I can do, so I'm just going to do this and make it mine.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel that if I were to extend outside of my current skill set, I would end up with something that's kind of half-assed, kind of, like, not as good as it should be. Like, but, you know, I know exactly what I'm good at, I know exactly what I'm bad at, and I try to plan my projects around those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when we first talked to you about doing this, it was one of the most exciting things that happened to us probably in the whole process of putting the Kickstarter together was just getting a zip file from you with four like little games that you'd been messing around with over however long.
Yeah.
You do that a lot, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, my hard drive is full of stupid, broken, ugly projects.
It was like a Christmas, see. Though. Every single one had something like that about it. It wasn't just, here's a gray box place of a thing bouncing around in a room. It was, here's a Viking in a field with skeletons that are chasing you and that you're smashing.
For me, like the first 3 minutes of a game are probably one of the most important parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to kind of lavish those 3 minutes with like the most interesting bits, the most polished bits. So you guys got to see like the most polished bits of those games, I think.
Yeah, which is, well, even then you did the Adventure Game Studio game. Is that what the AGS game?
That
you sent. It was essentially for the readers. It was a point and click game, and it has one of the strongest openings I've ever played in a point and click adventure game ever, and I make them. Like playing that made me look at the beginning of the Walking Dead game that Jake and I are working on completely differently. You're this guy in a car, which I found out later is actually a sentient car, and I thought it was just the dude. I thought it was your driver, and you're leaning out of this out of the side of this. Basically this hatchback with a rocket launcher, and it just says, like, what does it say? Like, shooting dragon? Or
keep the car steady, dragon.
Keep the car steady, dragon. He's like, you can see him bobbing in the window, and you click, and a rocket just scorches across the screen, off screen. You hear a giant explosion, and the game begins.
Yeah.
And It was so satisfying. Jake and I talked a lot about what was satisfying just about that opening, while thinking about what's going to be satisfying for this one minute interaction in The Walking Dead.
Right.
So it definitely feels like that.
Cool.
But thought is in there. So I don't know if put that feather in your cap. Walking Dead also additional design by Blendo Games.
Sweet.
Lawyers will love that.
Yeah, those title sequences I love doing. You mm-hmm. know, you can do so much with them. Mm-hmm. Just make that. I don't know how to describe it.
Well, the funny thing is, and you know, not without to give anything away about the game, but your joy of the title sequence is part of the gameplay at one point of 30 Flights of Loving, which is awesome. It's really, really tremendous. It's one of those moments where we were playing the build when you first put that stuff in, and Jake just went, "Oh shit," because he saw exactly what was happening. Oh shit, and because at one point in the game, you were conveying that backstory, but with a completely different means.
Right.
And we'll definitely talk about it once the game's out. And I liked it. I was like, oh, this is really good. And you're like, oh, no, I'm taking all that stuff out. I have a different thing I'm doing. Oh, he's taking all that stuff out. And then, boom, the way you get to know the people you meet in 30 Bites of Loving is awesome.
Yeah. I put that in because you guys said that, had that feedback. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, so at one point you were talking to people and there's a little dialogue things mm-hmm. that pops up and you guys kind of like that. But then I had my thing in Gravity Bone where I didn't want any dialogue.
Right.
Like, I'm not a big fan of dialogue in video games. So I thought, how can I try to do what the Idle Thumbs guys are talking about of trying to convey this backstory, but without having, you know, a screen of text.
So that's a cool solution. Well, you nailed that out of the park.
Excellent.
It's so
excellent.
Good. Oh yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's good. I mean, I'm glad that's where you went, and I'm glad you stayed true to what Gravity Bone was about, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it definitely... And again, the conceit of this game is so different than Gravity Bone, but I think people... Also, if you haven't played Gravity Bone and you're listening to this, go play Gravity Bone, for Christ's sake. Like, right now, just stop listening to this and just go over to Blendo Games and download Gravity Bone and play the crap out of it, because it's really, really fun. And it'll get you jazzed for having backed this Kickstarter, because you have a treat coming towards you. I mean, it has been super cool just to see your process and to be, even just, we really tried to not give too many notes because we just wanted to see you make stuff, and it was really, really thrilling. It was really, really, this entire process has been so much, it's been a lot of hard work and, you know, a lot of meetings and the three of us just sort of, you know, figuring out how the heck we're going to pull this off. But whenever a build would come through, I was like, we're not doing anything. We're playing this. And it was really fun. So thank you.
No, yeah. It was awesome working with you guys. And Chris Remo's awesome music was, you know, perfect for the game. It was really cool.
Well, and again, it's funny. I said this over coffee, but Chris writes music that if I had any talent whatsoever, and this is a compliment I paid to him directly, I think. At least I hope. Chris, if you're listening to this, listen to this. If I could write music, I would just want to write the style of things that he is capable of writing. It's pitch perfect in the game. It's really pitch perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it dropped in the first time, I know he was thrilled, obviously. And Jake and I both gave each other the oh shit smug face again. Like, oh man, there's something here. So
got to stop doing that face.
Yeah. yeah. Well, thanks. It's been a thrill, and we'll get you up to San Francisco and have you on a real cast.
Excellent.
Cool.
Love it.
All right. Goodbye, dear readers. Thanks again. Bye.
What are you doing? I'm trying to... It's not getting on there because you keep... What?
I don't think this is the right one.